Hi, everybody, and welcome to another podcast and the blog on alanarnett.com. It is Sunday, May 5th, 2024, and this is the weekend update for the Everest and the other 8,000-meter mountains spring season. So I guess the big news from last week was that there really was not a lot of news. It ended up that the winds came in as forecasted. Meteorologist Mark de Keyser out of Belgium did a great job of updating everybody that it was coming in, and he was spot on. It was, I don't know, 65 to 100 mile an hour winds in the summit, and it really made havoc, especially at Camp 2, where it destroyed about 40 tents or damaged them. Not really sure it destroyed them or not. It's really interesting. I've been at Camp 2, actually I've been at Camp 1, 2, and 3 when the winds were gusting at, you know, 40, 50, 60, 70 miles an hour. And it is amazing what the Sherpas do. They'll actually stand up in the tents, like the cook tents, the big dome tents, and they'll just stand there with their hands up on the side of the tent for literally hours holding the tent up rather than letting it come down. Because once it comes down, if it's like one of the cooking tents, it's going to take out stoves and it's just going to be a mess. And it's going to be very difficult to recover. So these guys just do phenomenal work whenever these storms come in. And luckily this one was predicted. So they were able to take down a lot of the tents and put rocks on top of them to kind of keep them from blowing away. We've seen this happen a lot throughout the years, you know, on K2, especially Camp 2 on K2. There is just tent shreds all over the place from these storms that come in. And if you leave your tent up pitched and upright and you go back down to base camp, let's say on a rotation, then in all likelihood, you're going to come back and find your tent has been destroyed. And if you left gear in the tent, it got blown away. So it's something that you have to pay a lot of attention to by the forecast, especially these high winds on the upper camps. In this case, one of the main casualties were these big dome tents. You've seen these big, big dome tents. They're very popular. Almost every expedition now has them at base camp. And a lot of them have them at Camp 2 also on Everest on the Nepal side, because that's considered to be advanced base camp. Personally, I'm against this. I mean, it's the same altitude as you have on Denali, and you don't have any of this type of luxury on Denali. Now, albeit you can dig snow caves on Denali and put up pyramid tents on top of that to have some type of structure that you can sit down and get away from the elements. But having these huge dome tents just to me seems like it's a luxury that's it's not worth it, especially in terms of the manpower it takes the Sherpas to carry that heavy fabric on their backs up through the icefall. It slows them down. They can't go as fast as they would like to go. And I think it's just unnecessary luxury. So enough of that rant. Sorry about that. So anyway, what the winds did do, the other impact it has, what it slowed the rope fixing down. And so the Sherpas from Seven Summits Treks, they got the fixed rope up to the South Col that's right at 8,000 meters. And then they hightailed it back to base camp before the storm hit. So today, Sunday, the winds have calmed down. They're supposed to be pretty good out throughout this entire upcoming week, which is fantastic news for almost everybody. But it really means that the Sherpas will get the ropes to the summit. And the forecast has been they'll have it in by May 10th. And so that would not be surprising to me. That would be, what would that be, next Friday or so. And it might even get in earlier. And as I mentioned in last week's update, once those ropes go in, you're going to see the big, massive Sherpa teams, Nepali teams, like Seven Summits Treks with 100 members and 8K expeditions and Imagine Nepal and others. They'll be fast followers. And so we'll probably begin to see summits this time next weekend going into the following week. Of course, that all assumes that the weather is going to hold out. So that's probably going to be the first big weather window about a week from today. And then the long range forecast, for whatever that's worth, has winds coming back in. And so then we'll probably see a second big wave sometime around May, let's say 15th through the 20th. So I'm expecting to see two very large waves. And that'll really is going to take care of, I would guess, 80% of the climbers. And by, let's say, 2 weeks from now, that would be the 21st. I'm going to think the season is going to be wrapping up. because most everybody will have already made their attempt, and things will really begin to pick up on the north side. But the south side is going to begin to wind down. It always winds down towards the end of May because that's when the monsoons move in. Also, it becomes warmer and the ice fall begins to melt out, and that causes it to be incredibly dangerous. So the ice fall doctors will go in and remove all the ladders in the ice fall, but they'll leave the fixed ropes, and they'll leave the fixed ropes going up from Camp 2 to the summit. Occasionally, there'll be an effort to go in and clean those up. The Sherpas will go and the old ropes, they'll try to cut them away so that they don't get confused for good ropes. Remember, these ropes are not good after a few months because the UV rays and the light cause the fabric and the ropes to weaken. And so you would not want to depend upon that to save your life if you fell. The rope would probably snap and just send you, down whatever slope that you're on. Hey, speaking of these fixed ropes, I noticed something that was really interesting. I've got it in the blog, in this post, this weekend update on my blog at alanarnett.com. But I noticed that a Sherpa was using a battery-operated drill with probably a 2-foot-long bit on it. And what he was doing, and he made a comment on Facebook and Instagram both, that the drill was provided by Conrad Anchor and probably part of the Khumbu Climbing Center, which trains a lot of the Sherpas in that area. They just do fantastic work. In any event, what they were using this drill for, it looked like they were drilling holes into the Lhotse face. It could have been elsewhere, but I'm betting it's a Lhotse face at 60 degree angle. So two holes at a 60 degree angle. And then you thread a rope through that, and then you attach like carabiners and other devices to fix the rope to it. So it really becomes a natural anchor. And the beauty of this is that, number one, it's incredibly strong. You wouldn't think that going through the ice down, let's say, 10 inches or so at a 60-degree angle in ice, that would be strong enough to like it would be in lieu of, a metal picket or an ice screw. But it is. And it's been used for years. They're called V-threads. And it was done, they were invented, I don't know, a number of years ago, probably a good 20 years ago, I think. I need to check on that to be sure. But nonetheless, it's really cool what they do with it. And so what it does, you don't have to now have the anchors or an ice screw that perhaps would be left on the mountain. So it's better for the mountain. It's a safe method of creating safety anchors and fixing the fixed line to the mountain. And it doesn't leave anything on the mountain. So it really is kind of a leave no trace method of doing these. And so again, V-thread, it was named after Abalabkov, a Russian who invented it. It's also called the A-thread, which is much easier, or a zero thread. So lots of different names for it. Anyway, I've got the video on my blog, and so I just thought that was really cool from a mountaineering perspective that they're using all these new techniques. I know the purists will say that you shouldn't be using a drill on Everest, but you know what? This is not the first time. Back in the old Hillary step, when it was really a step, not a slope, they took a drill up and they put in anchors and bolts on top of the Hillary step to affix an up and a down rope to make that go faster. Of course, the 2015 earthquake destroyed that rock formation, which created the Hillary step and has been there for as long as, well, who knows? It was first identified by in 1953 by that expedition, Sir Edmund Hillary, named after him. But that was the one that I climbed when I summited in 2011. And it was really pretty cool. It was like a 50, 60 foot off-width crack. You kind of had to stem. It was all rock. And so you stemmed with your crampons, had a jumar on the fixed rope. You got your pack on with your oxygen bottle. It was the real deal. You really felt like you were climbing at that point. I remember coming down it, though, that my oxygen mask froze up. And so I began not to be able to breathe descending the Hillary step. And I remember Connie was at the bottom. And I would look down at him and I just pointed at my mask. And so when I got down to the bottom of the step, Kami just took his fist and just hit my mask. What had happened was the ice had frozen in my mask, in the tube that led down to the oxygen chamber. And so I wasn't getting an oxygen flow. So he gave it a good whack and all was good. And we laughed about it a lot later on. So once again, Kami, you're my man. You're my guardian angel in the mountains. These days, the Hillary step is really the Hillary slope. The route goes to the right of what it used to do, and it goes up a still a fairly significant angle, maybe 50 degrees, again, 40, 50 feet. It does serve as a bottleneck in modern day. Sometimes it's wide enough to put an up and a down rope. Other times it's not. So the guides have to do traffic control. And that can be a point of queues and long lines going between the South Summit and the Summit. So we'll see how it works out this year. You know, I'm really hoping that with this window that we're about to walk into, weather window, when the winds are under 30 miles an hour on the Summit, and hopefully a second one that is going to allow the 400 some odd clients with their Sherpa support. So the, I don't know, it's going to be now typically a 60% drop off or 40% drop off. So there'll be about 250 people with their Sherpa. So maybe 550 going up. And if the 650 people spread over, let's say a 10-day period, we should not have any of the long queues that we have seen in the past when there's only a few suitable days for weather. But again, as I jokingly say, if you must predict the future, predict it often. So that's what's going on Everest. A lot of teams have already completed their acclimatization. They really pushed the envelope and they got up there when it was really windy. You know, that's a difference in the risk profile between different operators. Some are willing to send their clients up in difficult conditions, hoping that they won't get frostbite from the wind chill. Other operators are more comfortable just hanging out down at base camp and waiting until the winds calm down. And so that's what we're going to see this upcoming week with a lot of the Western companies, like Climbing the Seven Summits, Alpine Ascents International, Adventure Consultants, Madison Mountaineering, and the rest going up this week for their, what in many cases is their final rotation. In other cases, some have acclimatized elsewhere in other mountains. I know Lucas Frutenbach Adventures, that they've done a lot. They came in the so-called pre-acclimatized using hypoxico tents, and some of their members are actually going to go back down to Kathmandu and doing what Anatoly Bukharov called touch grass. Now, I don't think he quite intended to go all the way down to Kathmandu when he coined that phrase. He would go back down to Perche or to Namshi in order to enjoy the thicker air. And this time, people go, they take helicopters from base camp to Kathmandu, and then they come back on a helicopter, which is good because currently coming out of Lukla, Lukla's had a tough, tough season with weather delays this year. Hopefully it'll clear up when everybody starts to trek back down to Lukla and fly out on the fixed-wing aircraft back to Kathmandu. But again, we'll have to see what that's like in about 3.5 weeks at the end of May as people begin to leave the mountain. On the other 8,000 meter mountains, we had some summits over on Makalu, Nima Rinji Sherpa. He's only 18 years old, and this was his 12th 8,000 meter mountain, and he's on track to become the youngest person to summit all 14 of the 8,000 meter mountains. He only has Kanchenjunga and Shishapangma left. Of course, the Chinese have closed Shisha this spring to any climbing and probably will in the fall. So he'll probably have to wait till next year if and when China reopens it. Again, we have no idea why they closed it. Some have cited safety. Not sure I buy that because, you know, you could cite safety every year for eternity and never be wrong, because people unfortunately always die on these mountains. But he's going to go to Kanchenjunga. He'll get that one, I'm sure. So he'll have 13 to 14. And so congratulations to the young man. Really, really well done on his part. Let's see. On Kanchenjunga, speaking of that, the ropes are fixed to Camp 4, so I'm looking for there to be summits this upcoming week. And Dalagiri, has also got ropes on it, but the weather, as usual on that mountain, has really been bad once again. There's something about the geography of where that thing is located that it just gets pummeled by the winds, kind of disproportionately to what we see across the other parts of the Himalaya. Hey, in the Say It's Not So department, I caught this on the website Mount Everest Today that those of you that have ever trekked in the Khumbu or seen the pictures, there's this beautiful double bridge, swinging bridge, right at the base of the Namshi Hill as you're heading up and going into up towards Namshi. And that swinging bridge is really one of the most picturesque sights in all the Khumbu area. Everybody takes, it's like Amon de Blanc, everybody takes pictures of it. Anyway, in the Say It's Not So department, there is going to be in September bungee jumping off of that bridge. I know. You know, on one hand, I understand AJ Hackett and other people do it in New Zealand and other places around the world. So why shouldn't they do it in Nepal? It's being done in other places in Nepal. There's an adventure resort called The Last Resort in Nepal that offers bungee jumping. So it's the same people that are now going to bring bungee jumping to the Khumbu. It's been approved by the local authorities, and you know, it's going to bring in business. It'll bring in money to the locals, which is good. It'll increase tourism, which is bad and good. So as you can tell, I'm kind of mixed on this whole thing. In terms of the number of permits people climbing this year, for whatever reason, the Ministry of Tourism is no longer updating the website, which they had offered, and they did it on a regular basis. In fact, they've removed all the 2024 statistics. So now we're kind of going blind. The last update that we had was on April 29th, so roughly a week ago, and that showed that on Everest, there were 390 permits that had been issued across 37 teams. It has slowed down a lot, and I really don't expect it to be measurably a whole lot different. So, and again, I'm not sure why they stopped posting it. My suspicion is that they're a little disappointed that they didn't get as many people as they thought they were going to get this year. And so they're trying to, as usual, manage the PR and bury the bad news and only promote the good news. So this upcoming week, look for people doing acclimatization rotations. Hopefully, let's look for the ropes to hit the summit on Everest. We're going to see teams like Adrian Bollinger's Alpenglow enter Tibet and make their way over a 2 or 3 day drive from Lhasa to Mount Everest Base Camp on the north side, the so-called Chinese base camp. Supposedly there's been a team already there, a Chinese team, and in theory, they had some ropes already put on the mountain. Not a clue as to how high they are on the mountain, but I'm sure Adrian and Lucas and other people that are sending their teams over there, they'll figure it out quickly if they don't know it already. And, you know, also on the north side, I was expecting somewhere around 250 people total, and you can cut that number in half because of this month-long delay that China, this unexpectedly dumped on people for this season. But in any event, it'll all work out. And I think we'll see summits on the north side. And we'll see summits on the south side. Thus far, it's been a pretty safe season. Weather's been wonky. Right now, there's no significant typhoon activity in the Bay of Bengal, which typically kicks up around, sometimes it can kick up in early May. Also, typically in early May, the first couple of weeks, the winds really pick up. And maybe we saw that happen last week at the end of April, instead of now, in first of May. So let's all keep our fingers crossed that the weather continues to be decent, that the climbers continue to be safe, and they'll hit their summits and come home safely to friends and families, cats and dogs. All right. Climb on. This is Alan. And remember, memories are everything.